When it comes to maximizing time in the uplands, without fail, Onyx Hunt is my most valuable tool. From planning my next hunt through a new bird cover to navigating in the field, Onyx Hunt is truly with me wherever I go. With detailed mapping and satellite imagery, along with a multitude of map layers from land access to forestry and habitat information, and easy-to-use tools to mark, measure, and catalog important information, Onyx Hunt seamlessly integrates digital scouting with boots-on-the-ground time in the field. With offline mapping and Apple CarPlay integration, you are free to explore the wild landscapes our beloved upland birds inhabit. Planning your next move in the uplands begins with knowing where you stand, and for me, that starts and stops with Onyx Hunt. Download the Onyx Hunt app today and use the promo code BSP20 to save 20% on your Onyx Hunt subscription. When the miles rack up faster than your flush count, that's when you'll truly appreciate your hunting vest from Final Rise. Built for the uplands and proudly sewn in the USA, the complete lineup of hunting vests from Final Rise, from their all-new Summit XT down to the minimalist Sidekick system, are all built upon the foundational load-bearing waist belt and low-profile shoulder strap system, which allow you to carry all the gear you need and do so comfortably while maintaining your ability to move freely and perform when you need to most. With a complete lineup of accessories and newly released performance field apparel, Final Rise has the gear you need to help you get the most out of every mile and every flush. Final Rise gear is built for the uplands. Get yours today at finalrise.com. This episode of the Birdshot Podcast is presented by Onyx Hunt, Final Rise, and Upland Gun Company. On this episode of the show, we catch up with the founder of Final Rise, Matt Davis. Thanks for tuning in to episode number 213. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Birdshot Podcast. Thank you for tuning in once again. We've got part one of an extended conversation coming up with Matt Davis of Final Rise, and we will get to that momentarily. But I've got a couple things to mention, including our turkey vest giveaway. And with that in mind, thank you to Patreon patrons of the Birdshot Podcast, everyone out there making voluntary contributions, as little as $5 a month in support of the show, keeping the good guests and good conversations coming your way. I really appreciate it. And those patrons are eligible for our monthly giveaways, which last month was for an Onyx Hunt Elite subscription card. I've got a little update there. Our winner, Jerome, accepted the Birdshot Podcast stickers and can coolers I offered to send his way, but said that he was already an Elite subscriber of Onyx and would like that subscription to be given to a youth hunter out there that might find it valuable. So without a better means of filtering through this, we're going to go honor system. I think the listeners of the Birdshot Podcast are certainly honorable enough to pull this one off. So with that in mind, I will simply say, if you or someone you know are a youth hunter, we'll say under the age of 18, that you think would find an Onyx Elite subscription card valuable to fueling the fire in a young hunter out there somewhere, please email me at nick@birdshotpodcast.com. Put Onyx giveaway in the email subject line, and in a sentence or two, mention the person you have in mind, or if it's you, that's fine too, if you're under 18, just to put your name in the hat, so to speak. We'll do it that way. I'll see how many I get. I have no idea how many it will be, but I will do a drawing in a couple weeks. We'll say we'll give everybody a week or so to listen to this and get back to me with some entries, and we will give that Onyx Elite subscription card away to a youth hunter at Jerome's request, Patreon supporter of the Birdshot Podcast. So huge thank you to Jerome for supporting the show and in making that generous donation to the podcast and a lucky youth hunter out there. All right. That said, this month's giveaway is for a turkey vest setup from Final Rise, which is the Summit Series vest with the turkey seat and shallower front pockets. It is in the multi-cam camo pattern. I've got it here with me, and everybody signed up as a Patreon patron of the Birdshot Podcast before the end of March will be eligible for that one. We will do winner's choice, just in case next month's winner is uninterested or not a turkey hunter, for whatever reason, just throwing that out there. But I suspect somebody will be taking ownership of a new Turkey Hunting vest from Final Rise sometime next month. So that's enough on giveaways. Patreon patrons are eligible for that. They get bonus content. We do some exclusive discounts when we have those. And of course, we set everybody up with some Birdshot Podcast can coolers and stickers as a little welcome pack and thank you gift from me. So you can learn more and sign up at patreon.com/birdshot. All right, everybody else, please subscribe to the podcast, follow the podcast in your podcast players or apps, whatever you can do. Leave a comment, leave a rating, star rating in Spotify and Apple. Those are little things that just take a moment and are very helpful to the Birdshot podcast. So I appreciate that as well. And we'll move right into our conversation today with Matt Davis of Final Rise. This was a longer conversation and we've got 5 Fridays in March. So I figured I will split this one up into a 2-parter. Matt and I kind of catch up, talk a little bit about hunting season, mix in some miscellaneous conversation more in the first part of the show before we eventually get to new product stuff. And we kind of tease that a bit and talk about the new Summit XT vest on this episode before we get to the end of it. And that will cue up next week's episode, which will be very, very new product focused for Final Rise. And we will likely mix in some listener questions as well on that episode. But on today's show, we will catch up with Matt, and you will hear a little bit about the 40X initiative from Pheasant Fest, specifically for Final Rise, which you may remember me mentioning before Pheasant Fest. You'll learn more about what Matt and Final Rise are going to pull off in conjunction with that 40X initiative we have brought up before. And I will simply say that if you're interested in helping Matt and Final Rise effectively raise $1 million for upland bird habitat in Minnesota, please consider going to the Final Rise website and picking up one of the limited edition 40X hats that they have available. The goal was 1,000, as you'll hear Matt say. They've got a couple hundred left, perhaps, depending on when you're listening to this. And I would love for the Birdshot Podcast listeners to help Matt and Final Rise continue to chip away at that until they get to the finish line and Matt can finally put a Sharpie to that big cardboard check he already has prepared to make the big donation to Pheasants Forever. So again, you'll hear some more details on today's show, but please consider that as a pretty cool initiative from one of the key partners on the Birdshot Podcast. Let's help Matt and Final Rise get to the finish line on that one. I'll put a link to those hats in the show notes so you can scroll down and tap right to it. All right, let's get into it. We'll be back again next week with part 2 of this conversation. But for now, let's welcome into the conversation and back to the Birdshot Podcast of Final Rise, Matt Davis. All right, buddy. Well, I am super happy to welcome back to the Birdshot Podcast once again our friend Matt Davis of Final Rise. How are you doing this evening, buddy?
Dude, I am doing so good. Just grinding and blessed to be busy. Couldn't ask for anything more.
Love it. Well, that's good for a Monday, right?
Yeah, you know what? It's usually a cluster, but it's a good kind of cluster, so I'll take it. It's better than the alternative, right?
Yeah, exactly. Now, I know we were just chatting about the one-time sale on Final Rise Vest. Doesn't happen often, but about once in a year, there's a little promo, and it will no longer be active by the time people hear this. So unfortunately, that is over, but hopefully everybody got a chance to check that out. I know I mentioned it on the podcast at least once while it was active. So my point being is I was going to ask if you did anything fun this weekend. What have you been up to? Or were you just busy answering questions and doing sale stuff?
Yeah, no, just trying to keep all the balls in the air, and the ones you drop, you try to, you know, pick them up before they stop bouncing. It was a full weekend for sure. We've still got a ton of snow on the ground here. I'm like super anxious to get out, and I've got a couple turkey loads I've been working on getting ready for spring. I'll head to California here at the end of this month and open up our turkey season out there. And so it's good to be plenty busy, so my mind doesn't wander as much, but yeah. I find myself opening the gun case now and then and taking out the guns and playing a little pew pew in my office.
I love it. Well, I'm glad you planted the seed for the turkey hunting and turkey loads. I do want to chat about that a little bit later.
Yeah.
Funny you mentioned snow. We're going to record this on Friday, and Matt and I both had a couple of little scheduling things that we just decided to push it to today. And I feel like I could say almost literally since the time we rescheduled that on Friday until now, I've been snowblowing and shoveling all weekend. We got got walloped pretty good with a blizzard over the weekend.
Gosh dang, dude. It's been relentless here as well. I mean, it's good to have, you know, we've been in a drought for a long freaking time. Mm. This is record snowfall for us. For the past probably biggest snows that we've seen in probably the past 10 years. So hard on the elk and the deer, unfortunately. But golly, it's kind of just a give and take, and Mother Nature's going to do the thing. So.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I know early on in the winter we were sort of at a record setting pace. We got a big blizzard early, and this is like going back to December, got a lot of snow, and then I felt like it was just kind of regular accumulations for us, but maintained a good level of snow all winter. And then now it's been very mild and warm, and things were starting to melt, and then I would say in the last 7 days we probably got 2 to 3 feet more snow. So, and we got a pile, and it was like a lake effect blizzard over the weekend. It just started snowing Saturday morning and basically went the whole weekend. And I don't know how many times I shoveled trying to minimize the workload, you know, shovel less snow more times than all at once. But that is good for the grouse. I was thinking how the turkeys in this northern part of the world are faring with this deep snow. I think it's like typically thought that they don't do so well in deep snow, but clearly they do all right with it, because we don't have a shortage of them. But it's interesting, the weather conditions, but it's a lot of snow. And to your point, I think I have lived in this house since 2014, and I would say I think I could pretty confidently say that these are the highest snow banks and piles that I've seen since living here. And I pay more attention since I have to do all the shoveling and snow blowing.
yeah, it makes a difference when you're the one moving.
Exactly. That's awesome. Well, have you guys have you caught up and caught your breath from Pheasant Fest? And that was going to be my leadoff question for you.
Honestly, no, man. I mean, it was, you know, we had a really good show season this year. You know, added another show or two into our schedule, more so out here in the West. But just really fun, man, to go to some of these shows that are traditionally, you know, big game oriented type things, and have so many people recognize our business and be looking for us. And so it was really, really cool to just see the growth, and just, man, it's just super humbling just to see something you work so hard to create, start, you know, kind of getting out there, and people saying, oh, I've heard of you and heard awesome stuff and all these different things. And so, you know, that whole snowball effect, speaking of snow, right. It just kind of keeps coming as the ball rolls, and that transcended to Pheasant Fest. And that was just unbelievable, man. I couldn't believe the response to being there. We did a collab booth there with Onyx. We had a kind of a conservation fundraising reinforcement to work with Pheasants Forever, and we'll probably talk about that at some point, I'm sure, with their 40X initiative there in Minnesota.
Yeah,
I mean, it's kind of just been fireworks since that whole time, and then we rolled right into our sale. So I'm tired. I'm pretty beat down, but like I said, it's better than the alternative. I'd rather be grinding day in and day out than, you know, wishing we were being successful. So
indeed, it was a good time. The listeners will know that Pheasant Fest was great for the reasons that I was there, but I was personally not feeling so great while I was at the show, so that was tough. And I didn't even really get a chance to cruise around the show floor, so I couldn't say this with 100% certainty, but I will say it anyways. I think Onyx and Final Rise definitely had one of the coolest booths at the show. It was at least one that I visited.
Well, we were just down the lane, right? We were
exactly too far. Yeah.
No, it turned out really cool, and we just appreciate those guys letting us sync up with them and do something fun. So it's always fun to come to those and kind of be the hub of fun, as I like to call it. And it's just, you know, I'm just in there with my wife and a couple of my buddies that volunteer their time, and we're just blue collar bird hunters just doing what we love. And so it's fun to connect with people, shoot the breeze, and, you know, educate people on our products.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. And there were some
new product launches at Pheasant Fest, which we will touch on absolutely in today's show. Since we're on the subject, let's talk about the 40X hats right now, because that's something that folks that have been listening will be somewhat familiar. I had kept sort of pumping the tires on the 40X party that Onyx Hunt was throwing, and I described multiple times that the way it works is Pheasants Forever and Quill Forever with their infrastructure of grant funding and sort of the relationships and the partnerships that they have, they're able to really leverage membership and donors, donations to the organization to leverage that to the tune of 40 times. Basically, every dollar given to Pheasants Forever, they can turn that into 40X for habitat impact in Minnesota. And so that was the idea behind the Onyx 40X party. And you kind of dovetailed off of that. Why don't you explain the initiative that Final Rise sort of launched at Pheasant Fest and is getting near the finish line on?
Yeah, so really the meat and potatoes, you kind of just outlined it there, Nick. But like, you know, Ben and Andrew and I, we were having a handful of different calls as we were kind of talking through, you know, booth layout. And we were talking about like, you know, what are we going to actually do while we're here? You know, it's fun to go showcase new products and yada, yada, yada. But like, what's the big picture? Why is the reason that we're there? And Ben brought up the 40X and kind of talked a little bit about, said, hey, you know, I think we're going to do, you know, this fundraising party and different things like that. And they let us be a co-sponsor of that and be involved in that as well. And we were kind of just brainstorming, and I just threw out the idea. I'm like, well, what if we did like a limited run of hats? And, you know, we take the funding from that and we try to turn it into something special. And so we kind of kicked the can around, like, yeah, that sounds cool. And so, you know, I started working on the design and kind of buttoning things up. And the whole time in the back of my mind, I'm trying to think, I'm like, what is the milestone? Like, what is the goal that we're trying to reach here? And I couldn't get the number out of my head, but I'm like, $1 million. Like, I want to raise $1 million. And I'm like, how the heck are we going to do that? And I'm like, well, dude, 40X, like that is a giant multiple. I'm like, begin with the end in mind, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Okay, how much back from $1 million? And I'm like, well, dude, if I get 1,000 hats, if we do 1,000 of these hats, we sell them for $25 a pop. They're a really nice Richardson hat.
Yep.
It's a one of a kind limited edition hat. If we can turn 1,000 hats into $25,000, right? 25 times 1,000 is 25,000. Well, 25,000 times 40 is $1 million. And I was like, dude, this is like way too cool of an opportunity to not, you know, support and be a part of. Like, I use the analogy multiple times at the show there, but I'm like, if this was any other type of investment where you could get a 40X return on every dollar you spend,
sign me up. People,
yeah, they're emptying their life savings, right? Like, it's a guarantee. And I just try to put that into perspective. I'm like, man, if we genuinely care about why we're here and we see the big picture of what's happening here and what Pheasants Forever stands for, like, to me, it's so easy to get behind that and know that every single person that bought a $25 hat, that $25 turns into $1,000.
Yeah.
And anyways, and so painting that picture, I mean, it was awesome to see how many people jumped on board with that. As you mentioned, we have a couple hundred hats left, just over 200.
Yep.
And I really attribute that to just, we're small. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, you know, we had a beautiful booth, but I'm not Federal, I'm not Orvis, I'm not Filson. And so our bandwidth and our reach is a little bit lower scale. And so we've just been chipping away at it. The social support from the Upland community has been incredible. But I just told myself, I'm not going to write that $25,000 check until I know it's going to turn into $1 million. So we're pushing hard to get the rest of those hats moved. Have a couple other, you know, things I think we're going to push out there. Onyx is going to give us a little bit of love here shortly, since they're involved in that as well. But cool. Yeah, that's kind of been the hats in a nutshell, trying to turn 1,000 hats into $1 million.
I love it. I had to do the numbers as well, because you know, you say $1 million and then you, when you back into it again, it's all in the power of the multiplier. It's crazy. But you know, like 1,000 hats, I mean, that doesn't sound that out of this world, knowing that, you know, Pheasant Fest tends to draw in, you know, 30+ thousand people when it's in Minnesota. So yeah, yep. Very cool idea. And again, I mean, couple hundred left, like you're well on your way. I would say even that, it's going to be a very significant impact, but I know you're going to get them sold out one way or another. And so hopefully I know we've got a lot of listeners in Minnesota, and whether you're from Minnesota or not, I think you can appreciate the idea behind it, but go grab a hat. And I will say that the Bird Chat podcast is in for four, and I don't say that to toot my own horn. That is basically to toot the horn of the Bird Chat podcast listeners, the Patreons in particular, I guess, because you could pretty much say that's where the money came from. So Bird Chat podcast is in, and I did I took those hats from you, and there were three little kids walking by the booth, and I wanted to give them away, so I gave them to three little kids. I said, you want an orange hat? And they were all excited, so I gave them three, and I hung on to one for my soon-to-be 5-year-old son, and he thought it was pretty cool too. So thanks to the listeners of the Bird Chat podcast is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, thanks to you for using those funds to support what we're doing as well, man. It means a ton. So thank you, everyone.
Yeah. Good deal. Well, I will be sure that's on the Final Rise website, finalrise.com. I'll be sure to throw a link to that in the show notes for those hats in particular. And hopefully we can help chip away at them until they're gone. And you can write that. You already got the big cardboard check, man. I mean, we got to get it written out.
I wanted to write that at Pheasant Fest so bad that I'm like, yeah, I'm still gonna write on it with a Sharpie and take a picture just so I can say that I can.
That's cool. So, just on the event thing, any other? I know it's kind of, you know, the spring season's kind of the main event season, and obviously we're looking ahead to getting outdoors and doing a lot more fun stuff while keeping all those balls in the air, as you so aptly put earlier. Yeah. But any other event-related stuff for Final Rise that we could tip people off to, or nothing yet?
No, I think this is kind of our last hurrah. I try to kind of temper the shows with our sale, get that under control, and you know, continually, you know, work on innovating and coming up with different offerings. You know, I've got a laundry list of stuff that I'd love to bring to market, and it's just getting that all into perspective and getting things kind of scheduled out. So getting this done, you know, the sale and everything I've already mentioned, that kind of gives us a good visual or a good trajectory for where we feel we're going to land over the next couple of quarters here. And so once I kind of have a battle plan for that, it's like, okay, you know, we're now on pace to, you know, whatever we need to do unit wise, you know, working with retail partners, different things like that, and then being able to squeeze in, you know, some of the new stuff that we're working on that hopefully will launch, you know, prior to season. And that's in addition to the stuff that we launched at Pheasant Fest. So Gotcha. Lots of balls in the air.
Yeah. Very cool. And like you said, you got to get out in the field and test some of this stuff too, right?
That's exactly right. That's the perk of the job, right?
Yes. Yeah, indeed. All right. Well, before we start talking about maybe some of those new products, and we may get to some listener questions at some point during this, I would like to look back a little bit. We're not too far removed from the end of hunting season, and I would like to hear a little bit about Matt Davis's upland hunting season 2022. What's on your mind from last hunting season?
Oh, shoot, man. I feel like last year was just kind of one of those banner years, just collectively, you know, being able to go, I don't know how many states I hunted. I should probably try and add them up real quick in my head, but I think it was 7 or 8 states hunted for up the big game combined, you know, collectively across all of my hunting. We were working, a big part of that travel as well as we're actually working on a YouTube film series that we'll launch.
Yep.
We'll probably release those in right kind of end of July, first of August, before the hunting season gets going, while everyone's, you know, chomping at the bit and getting excited about hunting season. So that was a giant undertaking. Super. We're getting pretty close to working on getting some initial drafts cut of that stuff.
Okay.
And so that was, that was a giant undertaking. Like I said, it took a lot of travel, but I'm excited to see all that come together. So we've got 3 films that we're doing, and then we'll shoot some more this year, and we'll start mixing in some more content. We just made a couple hires. But anyways, hunting season wise, just fantastic, man. My dogs were in a really good place. My oldest dog, probably, that was probably his last year to really travel. He's, 12 years old.
Okay.
And
what's his name?
Reload.
Reload. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I remember Reload, that.
My old man, tried and true. And he's had some health issues lately. He kind of has like these miniature strokes where he gets up and his equilibrium is like screwed up. Like he can't walk. And then 20 minutes later, he's like totally fine. And he acts like a puppy. And so it's every dog owner goes through, and it's tough to watch him do that. So, we'll keep him close to home this year and still get him out. But it was just special to share, a couple of those last hunts with him. And on the same token, as one door closes, another one opens. And I had another puppy, that I started working with kind of halfway through the season. And he got to go on trips, and my middle dog Chief kind of carried the torch for the most part, as he should, as a 3.5-4-year-old dog. So yeah, dude, just awesome bird numbers everywhere we went, and just y'all. I mean, I guess there's a handful of things that kind of stick out, but they're, I guess in a selfish way, they're maybe kind of special to me. So I just keep them to myself, but It was an incredible season, man. It'll be a tough one to top.
All short hairs for you?
All short hairs for me. I was very, very close on a setter.
Okay.
And this pup just ended up kind of falling in my lap. I was honestly not really in a position to, well, not in a position. I wasn't necessarily in the headspace getting enough. And, we're just so freaking busy, man. I just feel bad when the dogs are sitting, in the off season. And so I try to temper that the very best that I can to make sure that they're getting the time and attention they deserve. And, ended up, hindsight's 20/20, obviously with, I thought I had another probably 2 years out of Reload. And knowing that's not the case now, it was a very good thing to have that pup in the pipeline, and he sure should be a really good dog. But yeah, still all short hairs, but I've got a setter on the agenda here sooner than later.
Well, I always like hearing that, but I'm always looking at the other, lawns and stuff, trying to see if there are different shades of green on the other side as well, even though I love my setters.
I think a good dog's a good dog.
Yeah.
I find about good ones of every breed and type. So they're all fun to enjoy. I've just spent a little bit of time behind the setters lately, and, I definitely enjoy the off switch they have. I would say it is a much better off switch than the ones that my dogs have. They're a little more high strung, a little more high octane, as I like to say it. They're absolute beasts in the field, and I wouldn't change a thing about the way that they hunt. But that's a handful of months out of the year, and my wife has to put up with them the rest of the time. So.
Do they hang around the Final Rise warehouse every day, or they got a better setup at home, or where are they?
So I'll usually have at least one dog out with me here in the house if I'm at my home office. And then my wife very much likes this puppy. His name's Goose. And so Goose goes everywhere with her. So he's constantly down at the warehouse, and 5 or 6 times a day I'm getting isn't he cute picture of Goose, sleeping in a chair or something like that. And anyways, it's fun. I'm glad she likes him, because I do too. But I try to kind of rotate him out, let him be out in the house. And it's just been tough with all this snow too. Like, our season goes through February, which is awesome, so we get a lot of hunting in. And post that, we've gone and helped out with some disabled outdoorsman groups and run dogs there for kids in wheelchairs and stuff like that. So it's been nice to have some good dogs at those. But they just need to run. They just need time outside. And I've been bad at giving that to them the past couple of weeks with trade shows and stuff like that. So they're a little more ramped up than normal, and that's my fault.
Yeah, that'll happen. You know, I always picture you as like you're out there chucker hunting. I assume that's like what you do the most, but I honestly have no idea. I mean, is that what you mostly pursue?
Absolutely. Okay. Chucker hunting is definitely, you know, kind of my flavor by all means. I enjoy the country. I enjoy the challenge. Yeah. That's just kind of the, I guess everyone has their king, right? Mm-hmm. And chucker are definitely king for me, but I enjoy basically hunting in general, but all the other species as well. I think variety is the spice of life, and all of them live in unique places. And it's fun that you get to go enjoy some different stuff. I did experience Mearns quail for the first time this year. I went down and hunted with Robert Poor.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
That was like miniature chucker hunting in the trees with little rockets. So I very, very much enjoyed that. I can see the allure and draw specifically of Mearns quail simply because of the habitat that they live in. And mm-hmm. It was fun to take some very well-conditioned chucker dogs into that habitat, and they just absolutely ate it up. So that was fun.
Yeah, that's cool. I remember the last time we had you on, we were talking about hunting the grouse in the mountains, and we at one of the interviews we did where your mom would drop you off at the top of the canyon, you'd hike down, and kind of reminded me of some grouse hunts when I was young, getting dropped off and stuff we still can't believe to this day. But did you get out chasing blue grouse this year too?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. The nice thing is I'm 5 minutes from them, and so I can be up there in a nutshell. I'll share a little bit about it. One of the hunts I really enjoyed with Reload, my old man, is he can still get around in the grouse woods because we can, you know, drive the Jeep to the tops of these big open ridges. And I mean, you can walk for miles.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can get into some super steep stuff, but, you know, early mornings, those birds are just right on those habitat transitions out of the pines, just kind of sitting in those little openings. And so it's easy enough going for him, and we can cover enough ground and get into him. And I got really into the 410s this year. I shot a lot of 410. And so I found this little Browning Model 42 pump in a 410. I ordered it off of Gun Broker. It was just a fun little gun. And
anyway, what is that, just like a, is that like a BPS or what? It doesn't ring a bell, and I'm pretty out of the, I mean, I used to own Browning guns when I was younger. I still have one, but what is a 42?
So it's so the Winchester, the model, like the Winchester Model 42 is like, if, and I'm sure I'm probably going to screw some of this up, someone's going to listen and be like, this guy's an idiot.
Sure. Send your corrections to nick@birdchatpodcast.com.
yeah. I'll let Nick verbally backhand me and educate me. But anyways, it's similar to, I believe, the Model 42, or excuse me, the Model
12.
Let's see. 12.
That's the old Winchester pump. I've got two of those actually inherited.
Yep. And so the 42 was like the original like 410 pump.
Okay.
And they only made them for a short period of time. They didn't have, I mean, it was like a slick, like a standard grip. There really wasn't any checkering, but it was like one of the very first pump, like manufactured 410 pump guns.
Okay.
Anyway, Browning, obviously Winchester and Browning are basically stepbrother and sister. It's tomato, tomato. They're out of the same office. Browning made a run of the Model 42. Cause I get people that will say, hey, is that a Browning? And I'm absolutely just spacing what their like small pump is. Okay. Not to be prior to that. And people are like, oh, is that this gun? I'm like, no, it's a Model 42. They're like, oh, they never made that. I'm like, yeah, they did. And I sent them a picture of the side of the barrel, you know, and they're like, oh, anyway, so kind of a not widely available gun. So I ended up paying probably more than I should have for it, but I thought it was super cool. I'm like, it's a 410. And I just had a, not a chip on my shoulder, but I really wanted to shoot a limited chucker with a 410 this year. And so anyways, back to my blue grouse and the 410 or whatever, just had a really, really fun hunt with Reload one morning, and just beautiful birds, fantastic dog work, made shots I shouldn't have made. Like it was just, it was super fun. So that was fun. And, you know, usually I try to get up later in the season and kind of hunt them kind of at the tail end of the season because they reverse migrate, right? And they kind of get up on top. Well, it went from like zero snow to like 3 feet of snow, like we were talking about earlier. And so we just didn't get a chance to spend a ton of time chasing the late season blues like I like to, but we got after them probably, I think I grouse hunted probably 10 or so times.
Okay.
That's enough for me.
Gearing up for your next hunt? Check out Ugly Dog Hunting Company for all your dog supply needs. Ugly Dog Hunting carries a full line of products for your bird dog and even some for you. Whether you're looking for dog collars, GPS tracking devices, kennels, beds, leads, training equipment, or first aid supplies, Ugly Dog Hunting carries it and a whole lot more. New owner of the company and friend of the Birdshot podcast, Mike Nadusky, loves to remind me that while I do hunt with pretty dogs, every dog can be an ugly dog. Check out the entire selection of gear for you and your bird dog at uglydoghunting.com. For many upland hunters, along with their passion for dogs, birds, and the places we chase them, comes a passion for shotguns. Upland Gun Company specializes in customizing shotguns for the upland bird hunter, imported from Italy and shipped direct to an FFL near you. Select from one of their side-by-side or over-under shotgun platforms and customize the fit, function, and aesthetics to your liking. Design and build your next upland hunting shotgun with Upland Gun Company today. Visit uplandguncompany.com.
I don't normally do this, but you piqued my curiosity. So I'm Googling now and I see I typed in Browning Model 42 and immediately there's some you can tell there's some overlap between a Winchester Model 42 and a Browning Model 42. And I won't sit here and read the whole thing, but yeah, that's kind of I had mentioned the BPS, which is the Browning pump. So I don't know what that sounds for, but that's a bottom ejection pump,
yep.
More modern pump. And I had one of those when I was younger. This Model 42 looks much more like what I was kind of envisioning. So that's very interesting. And in fact, the title of this article is Winchester's Model 42, the most coveted 410 pump shotgun ever built. So I don't know what the discrepancy is between Browning Model 42 and Winchester Model 42, but they're almost like in this first page of Google, they're like almost used like interchangeably. It's kind of interesting. So I'm sure somebody will email me with some history and I encourage them to do so.
Yeah, I hope they do and send it my way. I think I like meat and potatoes takeaway. The Browning has, checkering in the foregrip and in the stock, and also has a raised rib, where I think the Winchester, I mean, it was like no engraving, like no checkering, and I think it was just a bead on a straight barrel. So
yeah, it's got like the old yeah, you're right, yeah, there's no rib. It looks very much like the Model 12s, and maybe that, I don't know if the 42 is 410 specific, but it very well could be. Maybe the Model 12, the Winchester Model 12, was the larger gauge guns. I do not know the answer to that, but we talk a lot about side-by-side shotguns on the show, so I figure mixing in a little pump shotgun is probably well overdue.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a beautiful little gun. It kind of got beat up a little bit in transit, but I can't fault the guy. Yeah. It was just UPS being a bunch of knuckleheads, so it put the first scratches on it for me and made it easier to hunt with. So
well, I've seen some of your backyard gunsmithing. I've seen you turn a Prince of Wales round knob grip into an English stock. You got some skills there. You could probably fix that up a bit.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely not afraid to grind on a gun on all my turkey guns, polishing all the triggers myself with a Dremel and a bunch of grease. So they're good. Redneck.
That's hilarious. Okay, 410 chuckers. What was your load? What did you shoot?
So I did a little bit of, I enjoy hand loading for all of my, I guess my 410s and my 28s.
Okay.
And I actually shot this 410 in Montana quite a bit early season on Sharptail and Idaho Sharptail as well. But it was an 11/16 ounce of nickel plated eights.
Ooh.
And going about 1350, I chronoed them at like 1375. The recipe said they were 1400, but they weren't moving that fast.
Lead shot, I'm assuming.
Yes. Yeah, yep. Yeah. Nickel plated. Yep.
Yep.
And oh buddy, they, uh, They smack a bird. I'll tell you what, dude. It was, I didn't have a single cripple, anything like that. I mean, just, and you know, you're hunting over good dogs, right? I mean, you're yep. shooting birds, you know, 20, 30 yards, like max.
Yep. Yeah.
Like Montana, I would just shoot one bird. I mean, there's obviously so many birds up there. And so I would just shoot one bird per point, and you never had a problem getting your four birds anyways. And yeah, dude, I was tickled pink with it. So it was a really, really good load and patterned well out of both of my guns. So
that's cool. Cause I feel like number eight shot is that's a smaller pellet size than you would typically hear when you're talking chucker or even prairie grouse. But like you, for the reasons you pointed out, hunting over pointing dogs and or just selectively shooting those birds that are within 20 to 30 yards, I think there's a lot to be said about going to a smaller pellet size, increasing your pattern density and pellet count. You're not giving up a whole lot at those ranges.
You aren't, man. And I'm really, really big on that. I mean, that's kind of been my MO for a long time. I've converted a lot of guys from fives and sixes to 7.5s and even, you know, lowering the payload, but speeding those up. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's yep. kind of that teetering point where that small shot moving 100 feet per second is equivalent to or greater than, you know, a larger shot size. So if I'm getting the pattern density and I'm still getting that downrange energy, you know, within my shooting limits, obviously I'm not shooting birds 50, 60 yards, but yeah, I mean, it's a no brainer. And that nickel plated shot, it's obviously a harder shot. You know, you're kind of upping the lethality of it just because of its penetrating ability as well. So yeah, just across the board, man, I shot a lot of birds with it this year, a lot of birds.
Where did you get your nickel plated shot precision reloading?
I got it from Ballistic okay. Products.
Okay.
Is who I had a lot of people say that the precision reloading, that it's a better shot, I guess, is what some of these guys have said, but I've, you know, got a couple pounds of the eights from, you know, Ballistic, and it'll take me a while to get through that, only shooting 11, 16 ounces at a time. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the beauty of those. I had mentioned this casually, but I just picked up a 28 gauge reloader and I plan to do a little experimenting this year myself. So that's part of the reason I question that. But those smaller gauges they can be very economical when you're loading, just because you're using less shot and powder. So that's one of the appeals to potentially. And you typically pay more, a lot more in the store for that factory ammunition, just because they're sort of odd gauges or less volume. It's not strictly based on the raw materials in the shell, which is interesting.
Yep, absolutely. And gall, I mean, I've got, you know, I couldn't find holes for the 410, so I ended up buying, I paid way more than I should have on Gunbroker and bought a flat. I think of like the NSIs, and they use, I'm pretty sure they're Fiocchi holes, and I've had, you know, Chedi and Fiocchi, those have all reloaded super well for me. But golly, dude, I reloaded the same. I mean, I probably only shot probably maybe two box worth of 410 total on the season, and I reloaded the same holes over and over, and they're all reloaded and back in a box right now. I mean, the pump was a little harder to manage the holes. I guess I did lose one or two, because gosh dang, that thing freaking flips them down the mountain. a little more manageable, but
yeah, that's funny.
Keep in mind, if you're shooting a 410 pump, you gotta make sure you're finding your holes, and easier said than done with those little tiny things.
Yeah. Well, I'll throw this out there for both of our benefit, Matt. I do not have a 410 reloader, and at this point I do not intend to get one. So if anybody's got 410 hulls, maybe some Winchester AA 410 hulls, let us know. We can send those Matt's way. And if you got 28 gauge hulls, maybe we can split them up. But if you got Winchester 28 gauge hulls, let me know. Nick@birdshotpodcast.com.
Yep, you got the good ones for sure. Yeah, it definitely pays for itself over time, shooting some of the sub gauges, especially when you're shooting premium components.
Right.
I mean, I can, you know, my nickel plated shot shells are a fraction of the cost of, you know, just run of the mill whatever. So it does pay for itself.
It was interesting you mentioned the precision, the difference between precision reloading. Well, and I will put that in air quotes, only because when you mentioned that, I was looking into that as well. And I do intend to buy probably some nickel plated, maybe 8.5s, either that or 8s for some of my 28 gauge stuff. And I there's a little video on YouTube that maybe you saw where a guy was kind of doing a comparison test between the nickel plated shot between those two companies, and the end result of that video is kind of that the precision reloading shot appeared to be of maybe harder shot type or better quality in that video, but it's just one or one video on YouTube, so I won't claim any validity or authenticity to it, but I did see that as well, so I found that interesting.
Yep. I saw that exact same video, and I had a gentleman that was in my shop one time picking up a vest, and you know, anytime you get talking to someone, you just start running down the rabbit holes, and he kind of mentioned the same thing as well, so it was interesting to hear that. Maybe he just watched that video and was regurgitating,
right?
You know what? But
I've been known to do that from time to time. But moral of the story: you've got nickel plated shot from Ballistic Products and have had success with it. So that's probably all that needs to be said.
Zero complaints. The birds didn't know a difference.
And I will say that since I mentioned the reloading conversation, I have had a lot of listeners reach out and sort of offer advice or input, just if I was looking for it, and many people have recommended Ballistic Products as a good place to go and shop at, as well as Precision Reloading. So let that be known.
Yep.
Well, we could clearly go down that rabbit hole, but I want to transition to new products. I want to make sure we hit on this. Let's transition a bit from away from last hunting season, and let's talk some of those new product releases. Let's hit it off with the vest. What's new on the vest side of things? I know we have a new version of the Summit. I believe that maybe is sort of the biggest change, but let's talk vest a little bit, Matt.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So our new vest that we kind of came out with this year, and a lot of this was driven from, you know, customer feedback, suggestions. You know, that's just a big thing I believe in. I tell people this all the time, but it doesn't have to be my idea. Yeah. Like I'm not too proud to listen to people, and there's just all different types of hunting and how people experience hunting. And, you know, I feel like our job as a small company that has the ability to get that feedback and implement it, it's kind of only fair to make sure that we're trying to, you know, be as well-rounded in that product category as possible. Mm-hmm. And so, kind of meat and potatoes of anybody who's familiar with our normal Summit vest and the new XT, meat and potato differences. And so the Summit XT is a full 1,000 denier Cordura fabric, where the normal Summit is a 500 body, and then like the orange and brown accents on the vest are 1,000 denier.
Oh, okay.
And 500 denier, I mean, it punches out of its weight class. I mean, most of my big game hunting packs, and why I originally went with that 500 denier fabric is it will last an incredibly long time. I mean, this is the same packs that guys are packing out elk, deer, they're going on sheep hunts. I mean, this stuff gets put through the test. Now, one of the interesting contrasts though, between different hunting types is you have to realize that, you know, a big game hunting pack, you know, I still big game hunt, but I probably only do 10 to 15 days a year. You know, I might do one or two backpack hunts of 3 to 4, you know, 5 consecutive days. I might run out for, you know, evening elk hunts and different stuff like that during early season and whatnot. But the amount of use that backpack gets is pretty minimal compared to a guy that's getting out and doing a lot of bird hunting, right? Like if I think about it and I'm hunting, you know, north of 50 days a season, my upland vest is seeing 5 times the amount of use that my big game pack is. And while that 500 is an incredible fabric, I still have my normal Summit and I take care of it and it'll last me a long time. There's definitely a group of consumers out there that are just really hard on their stuff.
Wow.
You know, that's just how they are. They're just the type of person that they just beat stuff up and it just kind of have a certain expectation for it. And the Summit has absolutely met that. But just to get ahead of that in a roundabout way, it's like, you know what, there is a heavier fabric option out there. So we implemented that 1000D. It's not replacing the Summit in any way, shape or form, but just adding that additional option out there to allow people to find the right vest for them, right?
Yeah.
It's like you can go with the Summit XT, you can go with the Summit. We still got the Legacy, we've got the Sidekick. Like kind of rounding out that product offering, it makes sure that we have the right product for everybody, and nobody knows you better than yourself. And so people are able to make a, you know, an educated buying decision based on what they know is going to be best for them, and make sure that the product's going to withstand what they're going to put into the vest itself. So 1,000 denier fabric, another feature we got asked for a lot. And this is a give and take, because there's plenty of people that like this and there's a lot of people that don't as well, is the magnetic shell pouch closure.
Yeah.
And so the XT will have a magnetic shell pouch closure. We played a lot with magnets over this past year, and to address, because I'm sure people will think this as they're listening, you know, what about GPS interference? What about cell phone interference? Like, what are the negative repercussions of using magnets? And I honestly stayed away from magnets for quite a while, simply because I knew that they can and do have an impact. If the right magnets or the wrong quantities are used. So I really hadn't educated myself specifically on magnets. And so that was, you know, one of the rabbit holes I wanted to dive down this past year, and did a lot of time experimenting with, you know, where do we put the magnets, how many magnets, magnet strength. And so I ran through this gambit of, I guess, magnets and pocket styles and different things like that, and ultimately landed on something that I know works. I just know that it works. And so, you know, if people have seen where I hang my transmitter, it's right off the D-ring of the front of my vest. Yep. I mean, literally, my handheld could not be any closer to the magnet unless it was sitting directly on top of it. I run an Alpha 200. I run a Instinct watch. Obviously, hunting out here in the West, I have to know where my dogs are. There's times they're 700-800 yards away. I would not jeopardize the accuracy of my transmitter to magnets. And so refining that process and getting that dialed in, we landed on a magnet. It's a single circular magnet. It has a pull strength of 7.5 pounds. And when you encase a magnet, you know, anytime you're putting layers over the top of something, it's going to dilute the magnet's strength and its pull.
Sure.
Or the bite, right?
Yep.
And so we have these magnets put in a sewable encasement. It's basically like a PVC type encasement. So it's like a little pouch that we can sew through. Not only to sew it in place, it kind of dilutes the strength a little bit as well. And then it's also going to protect the magnet itself, so that over time, you know, plenty of us hunt in the snow, we hunt in the rain, we're getting out, we're getting after it, we're hard on our gear. That's just adding additional longevity and value and the lifetime of that product, specifically in that magnet. And so it's encased, then you're sandwiching it between a couple layers of 1,000 denier fabric. The way that we roll up to encase the magnet on the body of the shell fock. Anyways, it was just, I could nerd out for a really long time, and I'm probably
clearly
longer than I do.
That's helpful, though.
It is helpful, because that's a question that we've got a ton.
Yeah,
and
I would not have thought of that, to be honest. So that I'm glad you brought it up. It's indicative of how much you think about this stuff and what goes into the final rise vest, which is really cool. But so end result being, and sorry for cutting you off there, but end result being, it was not. It's not affecting your Alpha 200 is what I'm gathering.
That's exactly right. And yeah. I have a couple friends that work at Garmin and whatnot. And so really in talking to them, I mean, obviously they're going to say that it doesn't, because it's a, you know, $1,200 transmitter and collar or whatnot. But I mean, magnets, do they have an impact? Yes, but it's not going to be like, you have no, like it's telling you your dog's the opposite direction type thing.
Right.
Usually what a lot of people run into with their transmitters is if they're hunting in too thick of a cover, where initially they're setting up that transmitter and it hasn't had a chance to connect to the satellite. It's like a perfect example of this. Turn on your handheld in your house and go put your dog collar in your kitchen. Like, your transmitter has no idea where that dog collar is, right? Like, the satellites, they aren't going to work in certain types of cover. And I'm not saying like in the trees, I'm just saying in general, like, satellite strength is a big, big part of that.
Yeah.
Another key impact is when you're setting that up and you're syncing it, you know, they recommend, in talking to those guys, they're like, you know, turn on your transmitter and your caller's like 5 to 10 minutes out from where you're hunting.
Yep.
So that everything has a chance to sync and connect. And once that initial sync is established, once that satellite strength is basically matched up, your transmitter, your caller, everything speaking to each other, they're like, it would take a lot to skew that up.
Yeah.
And that's just one thing for context. And I'm not making the claim, Nick, that like magnets can't and won't impact a certain transmitter.
Right.
I can't make that claim. We have a small disclaimer on the website because I know that it can. I absolutely know that it can. And so we're just trying to do our part as well as, you know, we did the R&D. Now I want to make sure we educate customers that if they do run into a hiccup, they know how to navigate that and make sure everything's set up to work well together.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. And that's, again, good discussion there. Would not have been one of the first things I thought of. I have had issues with navigating while hunting with some stuff related to that a little bit. I always wear a compass usually on my shoulder strap. And at one point I was always carrying my cell phone in the same pocket, which was right up by the compass. And this was like, I think I must have changed my jacket and or my vest or something changed. And then I realized I was getting bad readings, and it was because my cell phone and the compass were right next to each other, and they were going wonky. So
it can happen. It definitely can.
It's a good reason to have some redundancy out there. You know, have your Garmin Alpha, have your compass, pay attention to the sun, all of that stuff. And that's kind of a side conversation to what we're talking about. But I was definitely excited to hear about the magnetic pockets. I think for what they can provide, I think it's a neat solution for those pockets and those flaps. And what I remember seeing at Pheasant Fest is those pockets they've got the magnetic closure, and then they have the ability to tuck in, and then do they fasten inside? Or I don't remember fully the details there.
Yeah. So on the inside of the shell pocket itself, we actually have some Velcro.
That's
so
right.
On the lid where the magnet is, there's a square piece of male Velcro, and there's that, I guess it's kind of twofold. So in adding that, I guess the prickly part of the Velcro, the male end there, that actually does create a small cushion between the fabric layers of the magnets, because magnets, when they're laying on top of each other, they can move or they can scratch. And so that can wear away at that fabric.
So sure.
To add, and trying to think through this and try to make sure that this is as bulletproof as possible, adding that tab right there just provides a little bit of separation there, that there's still enough bite in the magnet. It's going to close, but it's not, it can't wear through the fabric over, you know, the course of 10 or 15 years or something like that.
Yeah.
And then just double dipping off of that, trying to, you know, make things as dual purpose as possible, putting in that female Velcro on the inside of that pouch. So if you're hunting the prairies, if you're hunting habitat where, you know, brush and debris aren't even a question, which is 90% of the hunting that we do here in the West. Mm-hmm. I can just tuck that down inside, and you can with the other pocket, but the XT does have that Velcro on the inside, so it just fastens in place, and it's very, very flat, very accessible. It's really nice if you're hunting with gloves.
That's cool. Man, those little details. I'm not surprised in knowing you well and knowing the Final Rise products, but boy, I will shamelessly say it, that if that's not an example of sort of the level of thought that goes into these things before they get put on the website and going out to customers, that's really cool, man.
Well, thank you, man. We just love what we do, and I'm a bird hunter like anybody else. I just know how to sew.
love where your head is at on some of this stuff. That's cool. All right, so big question: can I put the magnetic pockets on my regular Summit vest?
So you can. So we leverage Molly webbing as our connection points for everything on the waist belt specifically. We aren't offering the pockets right now a la carte, just because when we cut. In soft goods manufacturing, you basically have a yield of fabric. And so what we do is we cut everything in a 1-to-1 ratio. And what I mean by that is every single component that we cut out on a sheet of fabric goes towards a vest. That allows us to get the most yield and value out of fabric. And then we're obviously able to produce vests at the more efficient rate. So right now I'm not offering them a la carte. I will but I'm probably just going to offer them in the normal colors that they come in. So for people that are matchy-matchy, they might kind of scoff at that, but I have some guys that they just, you know, don't care if they have orange vest, not a big deal anyways. But you can retrofit those onto them, and I know there's going to be plenty of people that do. So
So eventually when they come available for you guys.
Yep. Yeah. Once we can get our heads wrapped around what the heck's going on here with how busy we are, we can start, ramping some of that stuff up and offering some of those a la carte options.
Yeah. Okay. A couple of other things. I'm looking across my office here at my Summit vest hanging on my shelf over there. So if I remember what you said was basic, I've got the orange and khaki version of the Summit vest. So the orange panels on the pockets there would be 500 denier, and basically all the khaki stuff I'm looking at is 1,000.
On your vest, the khaki is 500 and the orange is 1,000.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
Yep. So the khaki and the Ranger green fabrics on our standard Summit are a 500 weight fabric. And then on the XT, the entire thing is full 1,000 denier.
Full 1,000. Okay. I got you. And that actually, that makes sense based on, cause where the orange is on my vest is the heaviest wear on those front pockets. So that's the heavier fabric. So that makes sense just looking at it. Okay.
Yep. Absolutely.
Cool. And then, so I was going to ask, I think we've kind of established it, but 500 to 1,000, you say heavier. So it's a heavier fabric, thicker fabric. Is there another difference there? Is the weight of it, how much are we increasing the weight of the vest? Anything to note there?
Yeah, so the denier is basically measured in woven weight, essentially, is what that boils down to. And so being a higher stitch rate, it's a little bit stiffer initially. Okay. So the vest itself has a little bit more structure. And that was one of the feedback that we got from some people. They wanted a more structured shell pouch specifically.
Interesting.
And that definitely helps accomplish that. Just entirely, it just has more abrasive resistance just because of the way the number of threads that are basically compacted into, you know, a specific area. So it is a little bit heavier, fairly negligible to some people. It may matter. I think most people that have experienced our vest realize that, you know, you load your vest up with 20, 30 pounds of gear, put it on, you still don't feel it.
Yep.
But the XT weighs 3.2 pounds versus the standard Summit that is 2.8. So about a 0.4 pound difference, not quite half a pound difference in total weight there.
Good deal. Yeah. Not a huge difference overall when we start talking about what we're loaded up with and the shotgun and the shells and all that. See, people just need to start shooting maybe 28 gauge and 410 and go with lighter payloads and get that heavier vest.
Yeah, save on weight. And I guess one other thing that I guess maybe adds, you know, quote unquote, a little bit of weight, is the Summit XT does come with built-in jacket lashes.
Yeah, I noticed that. Okay.
They're a modular option on all of our other vests, but they do come standard and actually sewn in on that XT as well. Now, that's definitely not half a pound, two buckles and some webbing, but it is a small difference in one of the, you know, obviously when we're creating a product and the difference in price and performance or whatever that might be, you know what, we want to make sure there's enough value in there for people to say, hey, you know, if I'm buying a normal Summit, but I'm going to buy a set of jacket lashes and I really want the magnetic shell pouches, well, at that point, you know, it's easy to justify jumping up into the XT, where someone that's like, no, the vest as itself meets my needs. You know, I'm hunting a handful of times a year, but you know, I understand the importance of good weight distribution. I want to make sure that I'm enjoying it. Like, great. The Summit kind of checks that box as well. So, that was an additional value that we kind of wanted to put in there.
Okay. I'm guessing functionally we're talking same shoulder harness, yoke, and same waist belt.
Yep. Absolutely. Those are kind of the cornerstones of our product offering, right? Those are universal across all the components. Obviously, you know, a thousand denier fabric is used on those, but design wise they are the same. But one thing to touch on, and maybe you're going to bring this up at some point, Nick, but I figured while we're touching you know, on typically, is the G-hook that we are now including on all of our vests. It kind of debuted initially there on the Summit XT. But if you're looking at the, you know, rear pictures of our vest on the website there, initially in our dog carrying, you know, design and bringing that innovation into the upland market, you know, we set it up on a loop slip system, essentially, where basically the top of your game bag could kind of swivel and adjust. And that way, if you put a dog in there that was bigger than the game bag, it could swing and cater to that dog size specifically. This particular component, I've known of metal G-hooks for a long time. I try to stay away from metal whenever I can on a vest, just sure. knowing that guys are putting nice guns over their shoulder or different mm-hmm. things like that. So try that we stay away from that if we can. But anyways, was made aware of these G-hooks, and there were really two benefits that came in upgrading to this, and there's a reason why we're using it universally now. We've replaced the loops, the plastic triangles on the top there, with that G-hook feature, which makes it easier to simply open the top of the panels of the vest and be able to load a dog. And so that's a huge deal. You know, previously you would have to unroute that one piece of webbing because it's a continuous piece. So you'd have to remove that to be able to put the dog inside, which is kind of necessary anyways, because once you reattach your harness, it's going to sit in a different spot because now you've introduced width and chewed up a lot of that webbing as it goes in to accommodate that dog. But moving to this G-hook, one of the nice features, obviously opening it to load a dog is a lot easier, to clean it is a lot easier. But it's on a tension slide system. It acts basically like a ladder lock, or basically that plastic piece that's on the front of your shoulder harness. You pull the webbing tighter and it cinches it down, right?
Yep.
Same kind. The benefit of that is, if you're familiar with backpacks or backpacking, big game hunting, anything like that, you've probably heard of the term load lifters before. And what a load lifter is essentially transitioning the weight of the pack, bringing it closer to the small of your back. And with those G-hooks, because they're on that tension lock, I can actually change the cant of my bag. So if you were looking at a bag, you know, perfectly sideways, and the back of the back was, you know, the panel on the side was flat, I can actually bring up the rear higher than the back. Mm. And I can suck that weight closer into my back. And initially I was like, you know, you really can't have a load lifter without a frame pack to support that, right? And obviously we don't have a frame pack, but I tinkered a lot with it this past year. And yes, you manually, you know, after you shoot your birds, you'd have to take it off, put it on the ground and slip them up. But it makes a significant difference. And really what it does is, in bringing that weight closer to your body, it's bringing it more in line to your waist belt in that lumbar pad, and it allows the waist belt to support that weight. Because the more weight you put further away from your body and below your waistline, that's what puts tension on that shoulder harness. Yep. And so, anyways, being able to suck that in, it makes a really big difference. And the nice thing about that one single component is, anybody who already owns a normal Summit vest, it's very easy to retrofit that. So we will have those G-hooks available on the website for anybody that wants to make that upgrade.
Cool.
All you need is a pair of, you know, tin snips, basically. You cut off the plastic loops there, you feed the G-hooks on, and you're ready to rock and roll. And it's just easier to use, awesome benefits from it, and kind of a no-brainer to implement across the line.
That's really cool. And the retrofit component obviously is very cool as well. I imagine you'll probably put together a video on that at some point if you haven't already.
Yeah. It's on the whiteboard here next to me to get that done.
Awesome, dude. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Birdshot Podcast, presented by Onyx Hunt, Final Rise, and Upland Gun Company. Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe, and share. And if you really love the show and want to contribute above and beyond what you already do by listening, you can sign up at patreon.com/birdshot. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on the next episode of the Birdshot Podcast. Onyx Hunt is the number one hunting GPS app. Join millions of other hunters who trust Onyx Hunt to find more game, discover new access, and hunt smarter. Onyx Hunt shows you nationwide public and private land boundaries. They've got topographic and 3D maps. You can track your route, location, and elevation profile. You can save maps for offline use and take Onyx Hunt with you wherever you go. The most comprehensive hunting tool you'll own
Download the Onyx Hunt app today and use the promo code BSP20 to save 20% on your next Onyx Hunt subscription. Know where you stand with Onyx.
Hey everyone, this is Nick from the Gun Dog It Yourself podcast. If you enjoyed this show, then you might want to check out my show as well. We highlight and break down the ins and outs of training your own hunting dog. Whether it's a bird dog or even the occasional hound dog episode, we cover all topics related to hunting dogs. Check out Gun Dog It Yourself on any podcast streaming platform and hit the subscribe button to be sure not to miss any future episodes.